Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach and master problem solver. Today, we're joined by a German travel adventurer, Michael Wig, author of his new book, How to Barter for Paradise. His expeditions have led him to every continent, but today, he's going to talk to us about a special mission he went on. Wig gave himself 200 days to barter his way from an apple in Germany to a home in Hawaii. Incredibly, his dream came true when what used to be a simple apple became a house with property. Today, we'll find out how he did it, traveling throughout 14 countries and exchanging everything from parrots, apples, cars, and gold. Wig shows us that value doesn't necessarily lie in a price tag, but in the determination of a negotiator.
Wig had to go through some pretty eccentric stunts to achieve his dream house. He took on a superhero persona known as Barter Man, fed wild crocodiles for a sadistic barterer, and raced an Olympic medalist in Kenya. We'll find out if traveling is as sensational and seamless as it was for Wig.
So whether you think he's inspiring or crazy or schemey, he is definitely one of a kind.
Can I ask a question right off the bat? Because you end the book and you offer a neat barter and you said, you know, if someone will come out here and decorate and work, you can live here for a while. Did you get any takers?
Oh, for the house, yes.
For the house, you got this house.
Yes. I had several people. I mean, the book has been published as well in Germany, and there was a TV show of the same title, actually. And so, yes, last year, like, many people have come, to do this barter deal, you know, to paint a house, to do something. And yes, people have been very exciting about doing a little barter deal to visit and to do something on the house. Yes.
It's just amazing, really.
So let me ask you this. When did you come up with this idea and how did it start? What did your friends think and why an apple to begin with? Is this like some reference to biblical Adam and Eve?
I actually came up with this idea like a couple of years earlier when I did my other project, when I wrote How to Travel the World for Free. So that was actually my prior project, Traveling the World Without Money. And basically that one, I've pretty much done on the barter system. So basically when I traveled the world without money, I always went into stores, for example, and I said, look, I'm pretty much hungry, so could I have a sandwich to eat, but I would give you something in return. I can tell you a joke, I can do this, I can clean the floor, I can, you know, do this and that. So after that trip without money, I thought, okay, now you've traveled the world for free on the barter system, so let's just take this to another level. So maybe let's travel the world again at one stage and, try to barter for bigger and better. So, yeah, so that was pretty much the start of how to barter for paradise.
Michael, when you traveled the world for free, I guess my question is, how did you get the plane fare to get the next ticket?
I mean, when I did How to Travel the World for Free, in my first book, there was no plane fare. So basically, I mean, I used airplanes in between. For example, I had to fly from the mainland to Hawaii or from San Francisco down to Costa Rica, and there, those ones were sponsored by people. So basically, when I traveled the world for free, people helped me buying like bus tickets or plane tickets by doing certain stunts on the street. Like for example, in San Francisco, I was offering the service of pillow fighting. So people could pretty much chip in a dollar if they pillow fight me. So and many people did that. So within a week, I had like 300 people pillow fighting me, and 300 people chipped in for a ticket. So this was pretty much like my first project. I did like funny stunts on the street, and people helped me with a ticket. Or I worked on ships. So I crossed the Atlantic working on a cargo ship. I went from South America to Antarctica working on a luxury cruise ship as the assistant of the expedition leader. But that was project one, not to mix it up. So in How to Barter for Paradise, things have been a bit different.
But you were still performing stunts. I was just amazed at your inventiveness, the imagination, the showmanship. It was just incredible.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, I was trying, in the recent project, I mean, I was, you know, trying to be creative to reach my goal and to, you know, think outside the box. You know, that was pretty much my goal, to think outside the box and do things to, yeah, barter for bigger and better and, to find really unconventional ways to do this.
Now, were you a natural negotiator? And give me the motivation for doing this. It's fascinating, and everyone is going to love this concept. Kids all the time barter with their parents. But what made you do this?
I mean, to be honest, you know, I'm not a good negotiator. So sometimes when I, you know, like in day-to-day life, you know, I have to negotiate. Sometimes I'm a bit bothered about myself because I'm not so good, actually. So when I started the barter trip around the world, you know, I wasn't really starting pretty well. So if you go to the book and, you know, I've been in India after like a couple of weeks and I didn't really go anywhere with my barter system. So I think I remember after like 7 weeks of traveling, I had like a couple of pounds of tea, and in India, a couple of pounds of tea is not really worth, like, that doesn't, you know, doesn't have really any value. So I realized after weeks, like, oh, okay, I'm not really doing well here. If I want to reach like a house in Hawaii, I really have to develop strategies. So basically after like 6 to 8 weeks into the trip, you know, I really sat down and I developed certain strategies how to barter for bigger and better. I mean, I realized after 2 months, it doesn't just happen because it's a funny story. It just doesn't happen. Like, you know, in certain countries, people are really good in bartering and they just sort of convince you to do a deal which is better for them. So pretty much I really had to learn by mistakes. That was that's part of the book, actually.
What are your worst mistakes?
I mean, actually, when we talk about the tea, I mean, I've started in Europe and, you know, I've bartered in Germany, Switzerland, Austria, then I went over to India and, you know, and, actually when I had the tea after like 7, 8 weeks into the trip, that I knew this is not going to happen. So there pretty much, you know, I set myself a goal. I said, like, okay, next barter deal has to be a tuk-tuk. A tuk-tuk is like a three-wheel motorized sort of taxi in India, which has obviously much more value than a couple pounds of tea. So this goal really helped me to move on, not just to say, oh, let's see whatever other people decide to barter next time. Because if you let other people to decide what to barter, you know, then it can happen, you know, things are fun and you go from tea to like a, let's say like a stool, from a stool you go to like a pillow, and from a pillow you go to, I don't know, a ball pen, but you never really go where you want. So to set a goal and say whatever happens, the next barter deal has to be a tuk-tuk, then the whole story changes, because then you decide what you want and you have a certain pressure to go there. And then, obviously, you need to find strategies how to reach
there. So, Michael,
and,
who is the idiot that traded some tea for a tuk-tuk?
Okay, so basically, it was this Indian guy.
Who was blind.
Right. Now, it was this Indian man who owned like this meditation yoga center in southern India. So basically, he first of all had like an old tuk-tuk. So it was a situation like he had a tuk-tuk he didn't need anymore. That was very important. And second of all, I started offering additional services. So at this this stage of the trip, you know, I just didn't barter the tea for the tuk-tuk. I always looked at the people in, you know, investigated what else do they need. You know, do they need to be entertained? Some people just wanted to be entertained in a funny way. So that was my additional service. Some people needed some additional workforce. And so, for example, he had this yoga internet center. But he didn't have any promotional video for his website, and you know, filming is my expertise. I'm working as a filmmaker, so I said, look, you're going to get this really nice video, you know, about your center, and you can present yourself. I could feel he was a guy who likes to present himself in front of the audience. So I gave him everything he wanted in that perspective. And so basically in the end, I bartered the tea plus the video. And this is how I continued for the rest of the trip. Like, I give you another example. I was in Australia and I had like 250 feet of silk from India. And there was this rich man who had a very valuable painting. But he said, like, look, my painting has a much higher value than your silk. Why should I do this? So, but he was like, like an older man, wealthy. And I realized he just wants to be entertained. So basically, I had to do a challenge. And it was in the Northern Territory of Australia. Well, they have like a lot of wild crocodiles. So basically, you know, I fed a crocodile and he liked it. He was like, yeah, dude, fed the crocodile at the river tonight. And, you know, for him, it was like the greatest fun to see me doing this challenge. So basically, that was my sort of service. And this is how I continued around the world. I always offered an additional service on top.
I wanted you to tell the story about how you actually traded for a medical kit and you actually smuggled scissors into a jail. Tell me what you were thinking.
Oh, right. That was pretty much at the beginning of the trip. Right. It was getting a medical kit with the scissors in it. I mean, that was a bit of a clumsy thing I've done there. So obviously you should never do that. I somehow did it and people didn't really check me. It was back in Germany in the prison. So it was just something I was so keen on doing the next barter deal. I just didn't really think about this. So, you know, nothing happened in the end of the day. But yeah, scissors in a jail is maybe not a good idea.
Maybe not.
You know, no, maybe not.
So let me ask you a question. What were the moral, ethical, and philosophical insights that bartering and traveling has taught you that you could teach our audience?
Right. I mean, if you talk about moral, ethical insights, you know, like a barter deal compared to the money the business, it's a much more complex situation. You know, if you have a money deal, if you buy something in the supermarket, you know, you give the cashier like 10 bucks and that's it. And you don't even need to know each other. You don't even need to like each other. It's just a very clear and quick process. So in the barter, if you do a barter deal, there is so much more about it. First of all, I think two people need to develop a relationship. You know, like you don't just barter like the motorcycle for the wardrobe. You know, because you really need to sort of trust each other, and everyone wants to have a good deal. You know, no one wants to get out of the deal and say, oh, this guy, you know, whatever tricked me or something. So there was always a personal involvement with the other person. You always have to find a person with a certain need, you know, who needs your motorcycle. And then, yeah, each barter deal takes time. It really takes time. I mean, I had certain situations, you know, I sort of hung out with people for like, you know, a day at least, you know, to really get to know them. They wanted to get to know me. They wanted to know why I'm doing this, why I'm trying to barter for bigger and better. So there is just so much more about a barter deal than just to pay with money. And so, and this is the nice thing about the barter culture, I think, you know, like you really get involved with the people. You know, people sort of open up to each other, to, you know, to do a barter deal than, you know, like, than just to pay with money. So it's a very personal thing to barter. And this is what I liked, and this is what I really enjoyed.
You know, there's something else interesting, and that is that in the 1830s, there was a utopian, a socialist movement that tried to reintroduce barter as a way of avoiding the exploitation of the capitalists and the labor force. And this guy was named Owen, and he made human labor, not money, the standard of value. And who picked this up? Marx. He used the same idea in his work on labor certificates. So he thought it was a more humane way of doing business. And I wonder what you thought of that.
Oh, right. I mean, that's very interesting to hear. I mean, I'm not 100% familiar with all the history of bartering, but I mean, obviously, bartering is a certain concept, and some people may argue, oh, this might be better than the money business, but everything has two sides.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one thing I need to mention, you know, it can sound very idealistic, oh, let's barter and let's, you know, stop the money business, and, you know, and we're out of the capitalist system and the world is better. But one thing is very important to keep in mind: when you barter something, you're also limited. You know, like I experienced that several times on that trip. You know, like you have to find a person who wants your good. And if you don't find the person who is in need of your product, and you don't really do the deal. So the money business obviously is easy. Whoever can do this, because money works pretty much everywhere in society. And if you offer a motorcycle, you can only go to people who really want motorcycles, and that's pretty much it.
Right.
So it limits you in a certain extent, although it sounds so interesting and so nice and so personal. But it doesn't always make life easier. So my honest impression about this is like it's really interesting to look into this. But there is also a reason, I think, why the money business works in this world, if you like it or not. I mean, there are several different opinions, obviously, about it.
Michael,
right.
The truth of the matter, from my perspective, it's completely ludicrous. Could you imagine 1,000 people going into a grocery store and each one having to negotiate? We would be online for 4 weeks to get a damn chicken. Meaning,
absolutely.
You know, so
absolutely.
there's no reality into the bartering system unless we're in a very small group where there's trust and there's time to barter. I mean, I don't like to wait in line more than 5 minutes.
I mean, I completely agree. That's it. Yeah, right.
And you'd have a lot of people buying guns and bartering. Give me what I want or I'll kill you. That's a barter.
And a lot of people doing chicken dances for chickens.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, and they're obvious. Certain things wouldn't work out anymore. So, yes, absolutely right.
I do want to know what you were thinking in India when you ended up with a piece of meat for a lawnmower. What was going through your head?
Yeah, that was pretty much one of the worst barter deals I've done. So something I should have not done, you know. It was like 100 degrees that day, and I don't know. And I was just running around doing this barter deal, and then it's like the meat, the raw meat. So everything went wrong. I mean, that was just before I really sat down, and, you know, just before the tea as well. And I said, okay, now I need strategies. What am I doing here? I'm not moving on. I'm just doing things which are not really processing. So the meat thing is maybe it was sort of unnecessary. But, you know, sometimes, and that's what I learned in that trip, it's good to make some mistakes to then really be forced to take something very serious. And so in India, I came to the point I had to take it really serious and to really develop strategies and to not continue like I started. So yeah.
Did the meat go bad? And did you lose the meat, or did you trade it for something else?
Oh yeah, I mean, I had to get rid of the meat very fast. I mean, it was 100 degrees. So basically, I really had to barter it fast. And if you're forced to barter fast, I mean, then obviously it's a very risky situation because you cannot really choose anymore and you take sort of any offer you get. And so, yes, so from the meat, I just got, if I remember right, I think I went into the tea, or there was one thing in between. There are 42 butter deals. I really have to look into it. So at least I know, I remember, I didn't do a good deal. So, yeah, to barter anything like food or at one stage I bartered actually an animal. So I can really advise anyone not to do it. You know, I was in South America and Brazil, and the person bartered like a young horse to me, and it was the same situation. I mean, obviously, what should I do with the horse? You know, like the horse is alive. It's not just a good.
I'm glad you picked a live horse. That was good. That was a better. You were going up in there, okay? And how did you barter for the hay to feed the horse?
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are these certain situations, you know, like don't do this barter deal because you have to get rid of the horse or something else very quickly. So those, in my opinion, were like the difficult situations I could have maybe avoided.
What about Africa? You said you had no luck whatsoever in Africa, and that's sort of interesting to me.
Now, why was that?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, the situation. Africa was, I don't know if you refer to that Tanzanite deal I was supposed to do. Like, I was in Tanzania and I brought gold and silver from a billionaire in Singapore. So I had some really valuable goods on me. And in Africa, there is the Tanzanite. It's like a diamond. It's only available in Tanzania in a certain area. So I thought, okay, why not turning the gold and silver into a Tanzanite, because Tanzanites in Western countries normally have at least a double value than in Tanzania itself. So I thought, okay, let's do a Tanzanite deal, and then you move on to a Western country where the value doubles and you really have a good deal. So, but there, basically, you know, I met this diamond dealer, and just before we did the deal, I realized, you know, with the help of others, you know, that the diamond did not have the value he told me it has. So it was like, you know, as I said, it had like a value of like $2,000, I think, and he told me it's like $5,000 or $6,000, and in Western countries, $10,000 value. But it was not. It was like a $2,000 stone. That's it. So I realized it. So I didn't do the deal. But that was a very, very, very tense situation to really, you know, deal with a diamond dealer in another country, and, you know, the diamond dealer meets you with his friends, and the friends are sort of like, you know, it was something
intimidating.
Exactly. If you get into the diamond scene, like the diamond dealer scene, it's a special scene. So you have to be cautious. And so that was definitely an experience. I think I pushed it a little bit far, but I got out of it, and I luckily didn't do the deal.
Yeah, and you trekked off to all those tribes. I thought that was something out of a novel.
Right. I mean, that was the interesting part of the trip to go to the tribes. Like, you know, there was the Hassaba tribe, the Toga tribe, and basically I went there. To be honest, I didn't really expect I'm gonna barter my dream house there, but you know, that was the kind of part of the whole trip, you know, to go to certain areas, to certain people who are very familiar with bartering, and I've researched before that you know, like these more than 100 different tribes in Eastern Africa, they go by the barter system, and that intrigued me a lot. So, for example, the Toga tribe and the Hassaba tribe, they live next to each other in very basic conditions, but they sort of deal with each other, you know, like with bartering. They don't use money, obviously. So the Hassaba tribe, they just barter the honey and the food they sort of find or hunt. And the Datoga tribe, on the other hand, they sort of produce these metal spears, these metal tops for the spear, so which the Datoga don't have. They don't have, they're not that developed to work with like metal. So this is how they barter. And I looked into this, and that was very interesting to see, like how tribes really use the barter system for their everyday lives.
I'm curious about something. What was your connection to billionaire Jim Rogers, and how did you get to see him? Was this prearranged?
It was arranged during the trip. So basically, you know, the way I worked was like, you know, I traveled around the world doing the, you know, barter deal to barter deal. So I was followed by two people who filmed me, since the whole barter story was also a TV show. So basically these two guys filming me every day doing this also supported me in logistics, you know, like sometimes carrying luggage, carrying a barter product, or even helping me researching. So I had these guys helping me and also helping me researching online. So I used a lot like social media, Twitter, Facebook, emails. And so one part of this was like approaching wealthy people and like sending out emails to all these rich people. And so luckily we got hold of the email address of Jim Rogers. And Jim Rogers is like a billionaire. And I still nowadays often see him on like CNN advising people about the stock exchange. And so he's out there in the business world. And so basically, we contacted him and he replied, but he mainly replied because he is also a travel writer. So after he made his billions, he wrote these kind of really extreme travel books, like traveling 100 countries on a motorcycle with your wife in 100 days, and all these like really outrageous travel stories. And this guy, who is a billionaire, did it just because he was like, he had some spare time since he was so wealthy. So he said, okay, you get a chance to meet me in Singapore. He's based in Singapore nowadays. So, and he said, like, look, you get an appointment here, but you have to bring a stone of jade. So I had a goal. I had a goal to barter, you know, first of all, the stone of jade. I had to fly to New Zealand to turn my painting I had at that time into the valuable stone of jade. And then when I was there, you know, I tried to barter the jade, since he's a jade collector, for something bigger and better. And so we had like this 20-minute barter deal in his mansion in Singapore. And that was very interesting. And I left the house with 3 ounces of gold and 3 ounces of silver. So the whole story pretty much worked out.
Stories are unbelievable.
It's really unbelievable. Yes, yeah. It was outrageous.
The story of Peter in Portugal, I think, is amazing too.
It's a similar story. All of these wealthy people, you know, there have been like all these millionaires lined up on my trip. Like, like the person in Darwin in Northern Australia with the crocodile was like really wealthy man. Jim Rogers was the wealthiest. And then there was the wealthy man, Peter, in Portugal. And his story was really fun because he was the CEO of a, like treasure hunting company. So they go with their ships to the Pacific, for example, to find treasures, to find like 15th century porcelain on the ground of the Pacific. That's their business. And then they sort of sell the porcelain, Chinese porcelain, for example, to like museums or art dealers around the world. And so Yes, when I went to Portugal, it was also sort of prearranged, you know, like my colleagues helped me contacting him and then doing a barter deal there. So yes, these stories were very interesting and only with a certain prearrangement.
But the way you got to him was fascinating. It was through a marriage broker deal, which in fact he didn't want in the end.
I guess Michael, there was something in that.
So basically, this story, yes, it was very interesting. I was in the Ukraine before visiting Peter in Portugal. So basically, in the Ukraine, I was on Skype with Peter, you know, prearranged to meet him, and I asked him, like, so Peter, what can I bring you? I mean, you're a wealthy man with your treasure hunting company. What do you still want in life? And so he was joking around. So he was joking around, and he said, oh, you're in Eastern Europe, where all the beautiful women are. Bring me some beautiful woman. You know, so it was more like he was joking. So I thought, okay, obviously I won't bring him a beautiful woman, but I sort of do something like an additional service which he's going to like. So I've produced like this little video of like women in the Ukraine who sort of announce things to Peter in a very humorous way, you know, like women saying something that they really like Peter, although they never met him, you know, like singing a song for Peter, all these things. So when I went to Peter's mansion in Portugal, you know, I just said, look, you know, I need your computer, and I need to play you this, you know, like I show you, need to present you this DVD. And so it was a well-produced DVD with all these women talking about Peter and how great Peter is, and with like all this romantic music. It was sort of like a funny piece, and exactly, and that was the door opener. So Peter was like 72 years old, and just having made him this present, it was a very good start for a good barter deal. So this was one of my additional services I explained early on.
Right.
Very. You have good emotional IQ, to be honest with you, Michael. You really kind of. You think outside of the box, which is great. But I'm curious about something. In Odessa, you visited a synagogue, a church, an Orthodox church, and a mosque. What was the significance of that in relationship to bartering?
Right. You know, I was interested in the religions. You know, like if you look at the trip, I sometimes, you know, added topics to it. You know, I really were interested in. So, you know, I went to the mosque, to the Christian church, to the synagogue, and I was really interested in different religions there, because Odessa is this multicultural place where historically all these different cultures and religions have come together for the past couple of centuries. So I thought, okay, if I'm in Odessa, let's just move around from like church to church to synagogue, and just, you know, talk to these religious people, and you know, I thought maybe they can help you, and there was, you know, some spontaneous good barter deal in it. So, like, you know, I can learn about the religions and do a barter deal. And basically, when I went to one of the Protestant churches there, it was very interesting. The leader of the church, he said, like, yeah. You know, he told me about, you know, their church and the history. And he's like, yeah, and you know what? We got so much, like, historic stuff in here. And he got this bottle from, like, I think I remember 18th century. And it was like this very old Easter Bible. And we did a barter deal. So I just gave him, like, a painting. And the painting at that time was not really valuable. It was, like, from an unknown artist. And so this, like, 300-year-old Bible was, I think, having a certain value. And it was just, like, you know, somewhere in the church, and it was not the only old Bible he had there. So it was just interesting to get into that and to do a good barter deal. Yeah.
So, Michael, what is your right now? What is your main source of income? I know it's not chickens.
My main source of income. So basically, you know, I my main profession, I would say, is like I'm a filmmaker. So you know, I filmed How to Barter the world for free. I feel how to bother for paradise, how to travel the world for free. Last year, I've done another project. It was just in Germany. It was called How to Travel 2,000 Miles on a Razor Scooter. So basically, I zigzagged Germany on a little Razor Scooter in 80 days. So I think my main profession is like doing these like sort of funny challenges and trying to write a book about it and filming video pieces or TV show about it. But if you really want to know, currently I'm not doing any challenge. I've just filmed educational pieces. So basically, I'm doing these 20-minute films about the clumsy bear. So basically, I'm dressed up as a bear, and the clumsy bear is a character for elementary school kids back home in Germany. So the clumsy bear learns how to use the internet. The clumsy bear learns how to eat healthy and all these little video pieces. So I'm filming this, you know, as the character of Clumsy Bear. And basically, this is my profession, you know, my project I'm currently doing for elementary schools back in Europe. And so this is how I make my money. You know, I produce films, I write books, I do entertaining and sometimes educational stories.
Do you ever do films for barter? If someone offers you something that is not cash-based, will you do a film for it?
I mean, I would be interested in it. I mean, it was a very interesting topic, but you know, it's I'm not really specialized on it. It was a project, and I was, or like, let's say, How to Travel the World for Free and How to Barter for Paradise. Both of them have been related to bartering, and that was very intriguing. It was very intriguing, you know, to really get into this world of bartering, but. I mean, if there would be a chance to do a documentary about this, it would be very interesting. I would like to do that. But I'm interested in many topics of the world. So it could be something else as well. You know, always look into something new.
One of the sub-themes in your book that I found absolutely fascinating and maybe your next project were the visits you kept making to soothsayers and fortune tellers and psychics. And I wonder why you did that and where that might lead.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting you mentioned that. I mean, exactly. So I just, you know, I had these stopovers at like these psychics and fortune tellers. It was a fun game, you know, because I was like on the road, you know, I was traveling around the world and always having this goal, you know, the dream house in Hawaii. It was every day I woke up, it was just this one thought: Will I make it to my house in Hawaii? Will I reach this goal? And so I thought, you know, let's just once in a while talk to a fortune teller or a psychic and just see what they have to tell. You know, can they tell me? Oh yeah, you're gonna make it or not gonna make it. So it was like a little game for myself, and it was interesting. I mean, most of them were very positive. I think there was only one exception, like a psychic who said like you're never going to make it, and I was really shocked because everyone else was always so positive. So this one was a bit different. But I mean, that's part of it, and so it was maybe I did it to really be motivated. I think, and to just see if these people make sense, you know, if these people make sense, if there is any truth between.
Michael, when you were dealing with these psychics, did you tell them you wanted a place in Hawaii, or did you say, guess what I want, and tell me, am I going to get it?
I think different situations. Sometimes I sort of tested them and I said, "Look, I'm on this mission. Do you know what kind of mission?" So I did that.
And when you did that, what did they say?
I remember this one situation. I think it was actually also in the Ukraine, and the lady was sort of trying to figure out what I'm doing. Yeah, no, she didn't get it. So it was more, it was funny. It was just like to see what can they really see in their, you know, in their cards. And I think she saw different things. Oh, actually, there was one situation, exactly, very similar, I remember. And the person could really see a lot. So I had both. I had really the situation, the person was on the absolute wrong track. So I thought, okay, whatever. And there was another situation, the person was getting so close to what I'm doing that it was a bit surprising, even a bit scary to me, because the person after a few steps could really tell what I'm doing. So, you know, I'm not superstitious. I'm not. So that part was interesting. I mean, I still nowadays, I'm not sure how the person did it, but the person knew a lot of things I was doing.
I think this sounds like a new project.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you think this was just a very little part of the project, very, very tiny part, this could be a project on its own to write a book about this and to really investigate on fortune tellers and psychics and the whole world of it, yeah.
So, Michael, let me ask this question. If you had 100 euros and you had no crew following you and no support, and it was just you, how long do you think that you could last in bartering in your travels?
Right. I mean, that's very interesting. I mean, you know, because traveling around the world doing this barter story and having people filming me, it did help, I must honestly say. You know, like, there is a person with a camera, and, you know, and then sometimes there are these wealthy people I mentioned, and, you know, and they like to be filmed, and they say, oh, yeah, and this might be like an internet or TV show at one stage. So this can help. So maybe it made it a little bit easier, to be quite honest. But some people even said, look, I don't want to participate because I don't want to be on camera. So I even had the situation where it did help. But to be honest, I probably had more advantages than disadvantages. So if you do this and it's not being filmed, I think it's also possible. But my strategy was, like let's use everything I can use to make this happen. So even if it's like a strategy, even if it's the camera, even if it's the fortune teller, whatever. So everything together made it happen. That's how I would describe it.
Do you think you had a turning point at Burning Man? You describe getting two bikes there, and then at the end you say, bartering is cool, but giving is much more fun. And I wondered if Burning Man had any influence on you there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I went there. I went to Burning Man for the first time of my life. And you know, for those people who are not familiar with Burning Man, it's this very huge festival, electronic festival, like 50,000 people in the desert in Nevada, and it's pretty much about giving and gifting. So you go in, you have all these, let's say, interesting, crazy people dressed up, and people having these interesting vehicles. You know, they, you know, built this UFO to just hang out that week, and so it's like a really fun party, all ages. And the main rule is, you don't really buy anything. So it's not like you buy your food or you buy your drinks somewhere for money. So this is all about giving and gifting. So people just bring stuff, they bring their food, they bring anything, and they share it with others. And so, you know, the other people do the same, so it's all about giving and gifting. And I went there actually with the misconception of bartering. I thought, oh, people barter, so they just, you know, barter this for that, you know, give me your sandwich and I give you this. And it wasn't. And people really, you know, I met the director, coincidentally, of The Simpsons, of the cartoons The Simpsons. There. Yeah. So I interviewed him. He was playing the tuba, And he was just a guy there in the desert, and without even knowing who that person was, he really corrected me, and he said, "Look, man, you're wrong. This is not about bartering. This is, you know, you just give, and you don't expect anything in return." And so that was a very interesting thing, because I was so like being oriented at that stage. It was like 150 days into the trip. So obviously, if you want to barter for bigger and better, you just deal oriented, and you know, and you don't want to make a bad deal like I've done in India. So at that point in Barter, at Burning Man Festival, I had to look into just this gifting giving society, and it's nice. I mean, I could tell it works there. People just generous, and it's not just all about deals in life, and this is very cool to get into.
So it's something quite different. Unfortunately, we have to end, but I thank you so much, you know, for giving us your time and for your adventure and for you bringing up a different way of human interaction through the exchange of negotiating and bartering. Again, thank you, and we're going to encourage everyone to buy your book.
Thank you.
Right, and thank you for giving me some space on your program. So thank you very much. It was really great. Thanks.
You're really wonderful. Thank you.
Have a nice day.
Same to you.
I want to once again thank Michael Wigg for being on our show. Go ahead and pick up a copy of his book, How to Barter for Paradise, on Amazon.com.
You know what's fascinating about this book is that I grew up in a bartering family. When my father was in the war, I lived with my grandfather, a doctor, who bartered his services. So our kitchen was filled with fresh corn, fish, and even a box of doll clothes and a doll that had been made by a country woman. So I really sympathize with the whole utopian idea of bartering, but I do agree with Wigg that there has to be a double edge to this, because it can involve the same kind of chicanery as any other kind of exchange. But I found his journey absolutely fascinating, really stranger than fiction.
I mean, his journey was fascinating, but I think that your grandfather was a true barterer. But I think that Michael is a bit of a performance artist, because he came with a crew. He came with people who were filming. The emotional effect of people being filmed is they want to close a deal and look good. So, you know, I think that even though the concept, meaning for me, if he would have simply went with that apple and nothing was filmed and he simply kept a diary, I would have been so much more intrigued and impressed. Having said that, he's a wonderful guy, and I think that people should read his book, because culturally, the one thing that we don't do is open ourselves up to other ideas, thoughts, and feelings that different cultures have. So for that reason alone, go out and get the book.
Yes, he was a very creative and inventive and intelligent guy who's done something very unusual.
I am Dr. Errol Gluck. Betsy and I both want you to remember, to every problem, there is a solution. Now, you're going to want to check out our other episodes on gluckradio.com. There is something particularly for you. Now, you know who I'm talking about. You're going to go out and you're going to buy Betsy Prelow's books on the art of seduction on Amazon.com. They're entitled Seductress and Swoon, which now is in paperback. So now you get a chance to buy 10 copies and give it away. Keep listening and keep sending us your feedback. Till next time.